Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. From our Town Fair Tire Studios, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Bruins and the NHL have taken some time off, but we will not. We are here each and every Saturday during the hockey season. 617-779-0985, of course, is the number. We'll take your calls over the next couple of hours here and talk a little bit about the goings-on with the Bruins. Really hasn't been a whole lot. They haven't played since last Saturday, but we'll use the opportunity to obviously talk about some things from a bigger scale perspective as the league has its all-star break this weekend and the team gets ready to come back and get into a busy stretch of the schedule here coming up. I hope that both of you guys have enjoyed your little vacation here mid-season. And the introduction to the bye week back a few weeks ago or a few years ago is an interesting one, but I like the way that they're kind of working it around the All-Star break here and giving teams a nice extended break. It's a way to kind of, you know, give the league a vacation without having everybody off all at the same time, so there still is some hockey games being played.
Well, if you remember when they first instituted the bye week, there was some randomness to it.
Very much so.
To figure out that the teams coming off the bye week were playing up against teams that had been playing, and those teams were getting smoked. So they had to rearrange the way they were doing it. So this is obviously a much more equitable way to do it, you know, where you have half the league off at once and you're playing a team that was also off relatively, although when the Bruins come back and they play on Tuesday night, they're going to see a Jets team that will have played on the Monday before. So that's going to be a little bit interesting as they head back to it. But, hey, it's a better setup.
Well, that's advantage for the Bruins, right? I mean, because Winnipeg can't skate till Monday.
Right.
They can't even till Monday. So they've been off for 8 days or 9 days, whatever it is. They skate on Monday. Then they play Monday night.
And then play again Tuesday.
Then they play again Tuesday. I mean, I don't know. I'm mixed on it. I think it is better. I think it's done better now. It's more organized in terms of keeping it equal. And, you know, I'm talking to people, you know, coaches and things and seeing their opinions on it. You know, most coaches say, you know, unless you're – and look, all the guys are going to islands or they're going wherever.
Half the league's in the Bahamas.
Half of that, yeah, that was the comment.
The other half is a pretty good pickup game
down there right now, yeah.
I mean, you're coming back equal, right? Yeah. that's the thought anyhow. And I don't know. It's good to have a rest in the middle of the season, but at the same time, what does it do to the rest of the year? It condenses it. Mm-hmm. So you're playing more games. Like the Bruins played four games that last week, you know, so there are weeks where you're condensing it. And I do think that there's no statistical, you know, backing to any of this. I mean, it's hard to do it, but probably impossible to do it. But I think it leads to more injuries. I mean, we've seen more injuries around the league. Why is that? You know, are there more games in a tighter schedule? I mean, coaches work extremely hard to try to find rest days. You know, there are less practice days. There are less morning skates. They're trying to find ways to give these guys the proper amount of rest so that they can, when the puck is dropped, that they're, you know, going at their optimum. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really tough to figure out that. And when you talk to these coaches, it's that's one of the biggest challenges, figure out when to give them a rest, when to push them hard, you know, when to get that practice time in, what to do during practice in order to maximize, you know, your on ice time. So because of that condensed schedule during the season, you know, it makes it a little bit more difficult, a lot more difficult.
Listen, the bye week is great for the broadcasters, but to Bob's point,
I think the players enjoy it. I mean,
they do.
I'm sure they do. Yeah.
They do.
Mean,
they look forward to
opportunity
it.
Just to, because I know even without the bye week, oftentimes when the All-Star break would come around, you know, a lot of guys are happy to be able to get away for a few days and just kind of just get off the ice and get away from the grind of every single day.
I don't think there's any question that the condensed schedule contributes to the injuries, but I think the other thing when it comes to fatigue, because you're condensing the schedule, even if it doesn't cause a health issue, it does cause fatigue issues, and that changes the product. Mm-hmm. So I think that long-term, maybe not such a great thing for the National Hockey League, because rested, healthy hockey players lead to a better product. And that's what you want across an 82-game season.
Well, let's talk about healthy players. Going back to last Saturday night, the last time the Bruins were on the ice, Tuukka Rask gets knocked out of the game in the first period. The best report we've got so far is from David Pastrnak, who said he texted Tuukka the other day, and Tuukka said he's feeling pretty good. His agent says there's, you know, doesn't seem like this is anything to be concerned about over the larger scale, but concussions, you never really know. Obviously we know how important he is and anybody in that position is. Let's start with the play where he gets knocked out. Did either of you have any issues with what happened on that play, with the player going hard to the net, with the collision that happened, with the reaction to it, anything?
No, absolutely not. Hey, Hedl's coming down the right wing side. He looks up and he sees 88 playing defense. Green light, right? I'm going to turn on the Jets. I'm going to cut to the middle. It's a green light, and he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He made a great move to go, you know, the quick hands to get that puck upstairs in tight. And then I think anybody objectively, when they look at it, he's actually trying to jump past Rask. He's not trying to make contact with him. And then when McAvoy comes in and hits him, and it happens. There's nothing there. And he hits him with his rear end because he's in the air trying to jump past him. And he's got no control once he's up in the air trying to jump past him. And then when McAvoy makes that contact, that's what happens. It's not McAvoy's fault. It's not Hedl's fault. It's not Pastrnak's fault. It happens. And there was nothing to it. Nothing. In my mind, anyhow. He did exactly what he was supposed to do.
No, and I think the players probably interpreted it the same way, because you didn't see any retribution from the Bruins. You didn't see...
Exactly.
You didn't see any issue necessarily. No. And, you know, as Bob alluded to, you could see the way that Hedl was trying to turn himself to avoid the collision at the end. But unfortunately, when you have McAvoy coming in at an angle, you created a collision. He crashes into Rask. Snaps his head back.
And he didn't. Somebody said he hit him with his elbow. He hit him with his rear end trying to get out of the way.
No, I mean, there was...
elbow?
Somebody said that. I don't...
Come on.
I mean, I saw no malicious intent whatsoever on the, you know, on the part of the player. Like, he said he's trying to score a goal. You know, if he's... You can tell. There are guys who will occasionally run a goaltender.
No question.
And you can tell.
And now we've got something going. Now you've got, okay, Henrik... You're fair play.
Right.
You're fair play. Absolutely. So.
No, I just, you know, again, I've heard some of that, especially, you know, in the immediate reaction to that after Saturday's game. And it's like, I don't see it. And, you know, I was here Sunday morning with Flynn, and we got a couple of calls on that, you know, the Bruins should have retaliated, or the Bruins. It's like the guys on the ice know pretty well. And you can tell, you know, even if it's not an immediate drop the gloves and, you know, just start beating the tar out of a guy, you can tell if there's even a reason to get their dander up. And it wasn't. It was concern over Tuukka, obviously, but there was nobody who even seemed to glance an eye in that direction, that, you know, that this was a dirty play. And, you know, I've seen some people kind of trying to put the blame on Charlie McAvoy either. Well,
No.
He's trying to make a defensive play. I mean, what's he supposed to do? You can't give that guy a clear path to the net and let him go one-on-one against your goalie. He's, you know, it's in addition to that,
the speed with which it's happening is hit Hedl before he got to that point. You know, there was a time when if you're going to come to the net, that weak side defenseman, that's a green light. You know, you're going to light that guy up.
Right.
If you see your partner getting beat to the outside and that guy's going to cut hard to the net, you're coming across and you're going to lay that guy out. You're going to get him before he gets to the goaltender. You don't see it anymore. You really don't. I mean, it's very, very rare. But that, I mean, there was a time, okay, that weak side D, he sees that happening. He sees that guy cutting to the net. Your partner's got no chance. You know, in this case, it was Pastrnak covering up on D. Mm-hmm. You're coming right across and you're going to lay that guy out. But there's just, you just don't see it anymore. I don't know if it's the risk of, you know, catching the guy the wrong way and the risk of suspension and that huge open ice hit that you just, it's just not part of the game anymore. And I miss it, but it's not part of the game anymore.
I think I have a little tear coming down right now as we speak.
All right, we will continue. We'll get into lots of other things going on around the Bruins, obviously, and we'll take a look, as I said, at the bigger picture at this point in the season. The trade deadline a month away right now, and there's been a lot of talk about that throughout the course of this year, what the Bruins might want to consider doing. So we can get into all of that, and your calls are welcome throughout. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey.
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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show continues, 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you until 11 o'clock this morning. Let's get to some of your calls right off the bat here. We'll go to Maria in Watertown up first. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, guys. How is everyone today?
Good. Morning.
Questions, comments, I guess, surrounding the goaltending for the Bruins. We all are very well versed in Tuca's issues with load capacity and game capacity and trying to keep him ready and rested. And, you know, the fact of the matter is this is the make or break part of your season, and the month of February is not going to be very kind to the Bruins with regard to scheduling. And I'm concerned about Yaroslav Halak's drop-off in play, because he's going to need to pick up some games for Tuca, particularly if he's still recovering from this concussion. And I'm just wondering what, if you gentlemen have seen anything that can be attributed to this drop-off in play, and if so, is it something that hopefully has been worked on or corrected over the course of this bye week? And just a quick comment as it relates to Peter Chiarelli and the poor folks in Edmonton. We sympathize with you. We empathize with you. We've been there, done that. You will recover. It may take a little bit of time, but you'll get your roster back in order. And how does Peter Chiarelli recover from trading two number one draft picks and leaving two teams with virtually nothing in return for those deals? Thanks for the time, guys.
I appreciate the call, Maria. You know, old friend Peter Chiarelli lost his job in Edmonton this week. And depending on who you ask, perhaps not a moment too soon out there. All right, let's focus on the goaltending right now. Yaro Halak has not been the same guy that he was early in the season. As Maria asked, what are you seeing? What you know? What would the impact of that be? And obviously, Tuca goes down. We don't know what his status is going to be coming out of the break immediately right yet. So if Halak has to be the guy for a short time, or like Maria said, as you get into a busy portion of the schedule here, you know, can you still afford to spell Tuca the same way you did earlier on in the season if Halak is the guy that we've seen over the last few weeks as opposed to the guy that he was in the first couple of months of the season?
Yeah, so what I've seen from Halak, and you know, try to do a little homework on this and talk to some people that know the position a lot better. Halak is not a big guy, all right? So when what parts of the net he covers, he has to be dead on in order to make the saves. And that's what he was early in the year. I mean, he was dead on in all of his movements. There were very few holes. He was fresh. You know, he was rested. He was, you know, everything was moving along nicely for him. But because he's not a big guy, when he's not exactly on, he leaves some holes. And this is coming from a couple of goaltenders and former goaltenders and talking to them and trying to figure out, okay, you know, what are we seeing here on some of these goals that are going by him? You know, that that goal against Washington that snuck by the glove hand side, right? Nick Backstrom's goal, huge goal. It makes it 3-2. You know, the Bruins are pressing. They just tied the game. It snuck like underneath his glove, I believe. There was another goal right after that, a couple of games later, that snuck underneath the glove. Bad goal down at on the left side. We've seen some goals kind of sneak by him if he's not right on the angle and the positioning. So maybe the rest helps him. We'll see where he is coming back. They're going to need him probably. They're certainly going to need him down the stretch. That's why they picked him up. He's capable of going on runs like we saw at the beginning of the year. And not that he was overly fatigued, but when he is just a little bit off, you start to see those holes. And I think that's true with a lot of goaltenders. We saw with you know, and then mentally it can wear on you as well. And all of a sudden you have that one good game. Bam, I'm back on. Things are going well again. And, you know, you kind of move forward. So that's what I've gotten from, you know, from people that, that know the position a lot better. And you know, I'll go with that. I'll respect their opinion. And, you know, we'll kind of keep an eye on it moving forward.
There's a saying in baseball that the media guy does not lie. And you've got a big sample size when it comes to Yaroslav Halak. And I think early in the season, he was absolutely on fire, dead on. But I also think you're seeing a little bit of a market correction. So his career, he's played 475 games in the National Hockey League. His average goals against 250. Average save percentage, 916. He's a little bit better in those marks right now at 247 and 919. So I think you're seeing a little bit of a market correction. I think he may have been playing a little bit over his abilities in the season.
That's kind of what it feels like, is that he's not quite as good as he was early in the season, and he's not as bad as he has been.
Correct.
Okay,
so, he was playing with some bad Islanders.
Gets that corrected again here? You know, yeah, you know, he's had some bad teams in front of him, but now get that corrected at this point of the season so that you have him down the stretch. And that he's you know, on top of his game down the stretch. So when you look at this bye week and with like it, don't like it, there's no question that the top line, it was wearing on them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that there were a couple guys, it was wearing on them. You could see it in the energy level. You could see it in the execution. You could see it in the, you know, whether it was a power player or even 5-on-5. You can see it in certain guys. You know, they've leaned on guys heavily this year to get the job done, especially from an offensive standpoint, right? You know, when, you know, beginning of the year, you have one line scoring or, you know, 1.5 line scoring. So those guys need a little bit of a rest. You know, maybe Halak, even though he's only playing half the games, you know, just to be where he needs to be for the second half of the season, maybe he does need that rest. So, and the rest certainly came at a perfect time for rest. So their play will dictate it, but, you know, you hope that this rest, even though they're off the ice, they're not on the ice, you know, when they get back out there, they're focused and mentally ready, and, you know, they get the batteries recharged, and a guy like him can flourish the second half of the season.
And I think there's also a few guys on the back end that had to log some big minutes early in the season because the Bruins had so many injuries that played far more minutes than they ever have. Torrey Krug is averaging just less than 22 minutes per game. That's the most he's ever had. He leads the Bruins in ice time. Brandon Carlo's had a fabulous first half, but even he had mentioned during the last time we had him on, which I think was last Saturday in the first intermission, as well as he's playing, he does welcome a chance to get a little bit of a break. But a guy like Matt Grizzlick, who's not a big body, and the smaller guys tend to wear down across an 82-game season. You certainly see that in the playoffs at certain junctures. He's averaging almost 20 minutes per night. So I think for a lot of those guys in the back end that the Bruins have had to lean on, this break will also help them.
Well, and look, the concern typically with Tuukka is, well, you want to keep him in kind of in that certain range of starts. That's not a problem this year. I mean, he's only started 25 games out of 49 so far. You obviously don't want to get into a stretch later on in the season where he has to start 20 in a row because his backup isn't performing. I don't think we're in danger of that at this point. You know, assuming Halak doesn't totally fall off the cliff,
yeah, well,
he's going to be around to start the number of games that he needs to start.
I think it's 13 games in February with some travel. You know, that's the last trip out west, out to Anaheim, L.A., San Jose, Vegas. It's all one trip, finishing up in St. Louis. That's the middle of the month. And then March, you've got 15 games. That's the busiest month by far. Last year, there were 16 games in March. I'm almost certain.
That sounds right, yeah.
Because we looked at that and said, you know, how difficult the schedule is going to be in March. And there's significant travel in March as well. You know, there's more road games than home games. But, you know, so the ability to have the depth, to get the and that's really important for Bruce Cassidy moving forward with proper rest and proper to have them performing the way that they need to. And then where are they in the standings? That's going to dictate a little bit how you coach as well. I mean, the juices get flowing. You can have the best laid plans. All right, I'm going to use all four lines. I'm going to rest certain guys or I'm going to, you know, plague certain guys this amount of minutes. And then all of a sudden you find yourself down a goal going into the third period or halfway through the game. And, you know, all right, we got to win now. You know, and then if you get a little cushion in the standings, that's a little different. But then you're always fighting for home ice. You know, so there's always something you're fighting for. And it's hard to kind of pull the reins back until maybe the very, very end. So that's why you have to manage them in between games, you know, because sure. You know what you're going to do once the puck drops. And you know, you assume that the majority of the games are going to be close ones. And now you're coaching and guys are getting ice time depending on whether you're leading or trailing or, you know, with the situation of the game.
Let's go to Steve. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for taking my call. The one theme that I'm hearing from you is about players needing rest down the stretch and managing and handling minutes. And I'm wondering if they're just going to continue with the defensemen, with they just alternating, it seems, sitting John Moore and sitting Grizzlick. They were 1-2 the three games that Moore sat. And why is everyone else exempt from sitting down? I mean, other than McAvoy, who hasn't played that many games this year, I think all of them should at some point in time be rested. And then I'm wondering what you think about it seems to be the Bruins might be renting a forward, you know, to get a forward for Krejci with the top six. And if they were going to get a player with term on his contract, a good top six forward, you know, do you think they'd have to maybe look at trading one of those seven defensemen as part of a deal? I'd be interested to hear what you say. Thank you.
I appreciate the call, Steve. We'll get into some of the trade stuff in a little bit. We got some time to do that this week, obviously.
But the D resting, yeah. I'm all for it.
Well, you talked about that last week, that you wouldn't mind even seeing Chara, you know, take a night off here and
there. Back-to-back games. You know, and all the travel coming up, back-to-back games here and there. I wouldn't mind it at all. I think it would be beneficial in the long run. You know, he's a tough guy to talk to with that because he wants to play every night. But still, you know, we need you in April.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but so there you go. You're managing minutes, but you need points. No, there's no guarantee for a playoff spot. You're in a wild card spot right now. You're not Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, and it's really tight behind you. And there's some teams that could catch you. And you know, Montreal's already done that. Now, you know, you can come back and try to catch Toronto. You're right there to try to do it. You know, come back past Montreal. Or you're right there to try to do it. You know, the Islanders have gone on their run. That's dropped another team from the Metro down. But so managing minutes, especially on the back end, where you rest guys in certain situations and you maybe do a rotation and then balancing that with needing the points, you know, there's your issue. So I'm all for it. I really would. I think it would be beneficial for the games that, you know, Chara did play or anybody. You know, John Moore, unfortunately, he sat out a couple of games. Came back in and played and did not have a good game. And he had been playing pretty well before that. So he's got to be able to handle that better than he did. You know, Grizzlick came in and I thought it's a week ago, so I'm trying to remember. But I think he played pretty well against New York. I honestly can't remember. Nothing stood out to me, at least that I can remember. So I'm sure there were certain things, but every guy, I don't think anybody's exempt. And I think that they should kind of dole out some of the minutes on that back end and sell it to them. It's a rotation. We keep guys fresh. We keep guys coming in and out. And, you know, guys have been injured for a while. I know that Char was, but he's in a different category than maybe a McAvoy, you know, 20-something compared to 40-something. Sure. So, you know, you get McAvoy the minutes, but, you know, Chara, maybe you dial back here and there. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
And that's where I think Bruce Cassidy's strength as a communicator will really be tested. And that's where I think it will also be an asset for the Bruins, because it's how that message is conveyed to those players.
Right. If a guy thinks he's being benched because he's not playing well, that's much different than we just need to give you a night's rest.
Right.
So that
we need to get everybody in.
Yeah,
exactly.
How do we convey this? You know, hey, there's a bigger picture. You know, we really value the way that you're playing. But we need this team at its best when the games matter the most. And if that means that I have to sit you out for a game to give you some ample rest so I can get somebody else in and also keep that guy fresh, then this team will be better off for it in the end. So I think it's how the message is communicated to those players that will be the key during the
process. So here's an example, right? I mean, I know that they're coming off a 9 days rest, but then when they come back and they play the two home games, so when you start February, all right, just an example for you, you're on the road on Sunday afternoon against Washington, Super Bowl Sunday, by the way. You're at home Tuesday against the Islanders. You're on the road Wednesday against the Rangers. You're at home Saturday. You're at home Sunday. You can't find 33 a little rest in that time? I don't know. I'm saying, you know, does he not travel to New York? Does he not play one of the home games on the following weekend where you got back-to-back games? Look, he's a physical specimen. We all know that. We respect the way he works out. We respect the way he's carried on throughout his career. I get it. I need you in April.
Right. I mean, well, like you said, he's not asking for a night off.
He's not.
In fact, you're going to have to force it on him if you want to give it to him. But, you know, that's might be what's best for everybody involved.
And it's not just him. And there can be a rotation there. You've got eight healthy guys. Unfortunately, Stephen Kampfer is the eighth guy right now. So, you know, he's more than likely going to be odd man out on most occasions. But the other seven, I mean, at least six, if you don't count McAvoy because he's missed some time, you're fine. A couple guys have missed time, but I don't think anybody's exempt back there. Yeah.
All right, let's get Sports Hub headlines. We'll continue with more of your thoughts on this Bruins team at what is essentially the midway point of the NHL season. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Don't forget, coming up on February the 7th, it is the Patrice Bergeron, Toucher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub present the Pucks and Paddles. You have now less than a week to get your bids in. If you would like to play as ping pong partners with Patrice Bergeron and the rest of the Bruins, a few Sports Hub personalities involved in that as well. Just go to 98.5thesportshub.com and place your bids. The bidding goes through basically through next Friday. So don't have a lot of time to get those in and want to get those numbers up as high as possible because the money goes to some great causes, including the Bruins Foundation. So we welcome in now Joe Haggerty, who joins us from NBC Sports Boston each week at this time, and he's on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Hags.
Good morning. How's everything going today?
Doing well. I assume you are enjoying your week away from the rink this week?
Oh, yeah. I am in relatively warmer environs down here in Florida. It's about 50-something degrees here on Saturday morning, but getting ready to take the family to Universal Studios for a day of dinosaur and Minions fun. So can't wait for that.
How do you feel about this team at this point in the season? They get the break in here. Obviously, it comes at a good time in particular because of the RAS concussion last Saturday. But overall, how do you feel about the way that this season has gone, the position that this team is in as they get ready to come back and start the de facto second half of the schedule?
Yeah, I mean, you got to feel good about where they are, considering everything that happened in the first half, whether it was the injuries, whether it was that trip to China in the preseason, whether it was some players that have, gone under expectations, like a guy like Danton Heinen, for instance. Ryan Donato, I think, more is expected. Some of the young guys have kind of stumbled out of the gate a little bit, not like they did last year when they were so strong. So, given all of that stuff, the fact that they were able to stay in a playoff position, that they never really went out, you missed Chara for a month, you missed Bergeron for a month, and you're able to kind of tread water and stay in and, get to this break in a good spot. If you play well, the next few months, maybe make a trade to bolster the team, I think you're looking to be in a pretty good position going into the postseason as you were last year. Maybe even you get home ice in the first round. We'll see how that shakes out, but You've got to feel good about that, but I definitely think this break came at a great time for the team. The losses to the Flyers, losses to the Rangers, some of the games that they played in the weeks leading up to the break, it kind of looked like a tired team to me, and it looked like a team that could have used a week to scatter away to the four corners of the earth, go to a sunny beach somewhere, recharge the batteries, and then get ready for the next 3 months, which are going to be a grind, obviously. So I think it came at a really good time for the team. They're in a good spot. You have to like where they are. But, as I wrote this week, too, still is a team that clearly needs improving. And it's been that way since last year in the playoffs. And they're kind of in the same spot now, where they need a little something extra. They're a good team right now. But if they have legit aspirations to compete, to win a cup, to go on a run in the playoffs, I think Don Sweeney and the management group have some work to do.
Well, that kind of leads me to my next question, which is obviously, we've talked a lot about trades this year and guys that are out there and all of that. Making the assumption, obviously, that there's going to be a deal or two made at some point to improve this team. But as it is composed right now, is this team able to compete in the postseason with not only Tampa Bay, but Toronto, Montreal, the teams in their division that are in playoff position right now? Tampa Bay is kind of on another level than anybody at this point, but, can this team as composed or with, an addition that's maybe not a big name or that a lot of people wouldn't look at as a major move, can they compete in the postseason against those teams?
I think they can compete against everybody not named Tampa Bay. I think they can certainly do what they did last year. As comprised right now, I could see them winning a first round against Toronto, even though Toronto's better and they've got Tavares. I still think they have some of the same weaknesses, even though it took you seven games and it took close to everything that you had to get by them. I think the Bruins are still capable of beating some of those teams if they face them in the first round. And advancing, I certainly think this is, could get to the same place they did last year as currently compromised. Do I think they're going to be able to beat Tampa Bay as currently compromised? No. And it's probably going to be the same as last year, where they're going to be out in like five games, barring something unforeseen from happening, injuries, whatever. We never know what shape teams are going to be in when they go into the postseason. But if, the teams as they are right now met in the second round of the playoffs again, I would expect a very similar outcome to what happened last year where, Tampa's deeper. Tampa's got a better overall defensive core. They're certainly deeper up front, more dangerous offensively. I think this Bruins team would be hard-pressed to really compete against them in a seven-game series. So that's kind of the assignment for Don Sweeney, or the situation that he's in right now. Is does he want a team that's going to basically do what they did last year and kind of repeat that cycle and still be in that sort of place, which isn't horrible, obviously. You make the playoffs, you win a round. Not every team does that. You're getting to a point where it's becoming an expectation again, and that's good, and that you're good enough to get there, and the players they have are good enough to get there. But there's a big jump to go from being that kind of a team to being a team that legitimately has a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And, goalies can get hot, things can happen in the playoffs, but if you look at all the teams on paper right now, you would say the Bruins need certainly one, maybe two players to really be competitive with Tampa Bay, and I think they would both be forwards, a third-line center and certainly a top-six winger, in order to compete with that team and not be so reliant on your power play to score goals, because 5-on-5, they haven't been that great offensively. To be able to match up lines with a team that can throw a ton of great forwards out on the ice on any given shift. I think the fourth line is really coming along, so that might not be the weakness that it was last year against Tampa Bay as well. But I think they match up with a lot of other teams in the East. I just think Tampa Bay is so far ahead of everybody else that if the Bruins really want to think they have a legit chance of beating them, they've got some work to do.
Well, that kind of, it leads me to ask the question, is it worth expending assets at that point? I mean, if Tampa Bay is that far ahead of everybody else, is it, is there somebody out there, or are there two guys out there that suddenly even the playing field enough to make it worth your while if you're going to have to give up significant assets to get it?
Yeah, or do you want to be the GM that goes into the a locker room and tells Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara, sorry guys, I think we're going to stand pat and you guys are just going to, we'll see how good we can be, and I just didn't want to waste the assets. I I think the window that they have with the players that won a cup, with the combination of youth and you know, the veterans that are really good, you know, having one of the best lines, if not the best forward line in hockey, you've got all these different things, Chara, Rask, you know, other components, that I think it's a team that deserves to, you know, have assets spent to add to this team. Now, are they going to spend a first-round pick for a rental player like Wayne Simmonds? No, I don't think so. I think they would be more tempted to do it if it's a player that's going to stick around for a while, a younger player that they can control. You know, and we'll see how things shake out as far as assets go at the trade deadline. And I don't know that Wayne Simmonds would be their number one choice based on his situation as a rental player. But if they get a player that comes in here and wants to stay, will stay, is under control, or a rental player that, you know, has a serious bent towards staying in Boston, I think you would see some of these assets spent. And, you know, you look back on that trade last year, and we'll see how Ryan Lindgren turns out. I know he's been pretty good for them in the AHL, and they've got high hopes for him. I think there is a ceiling to how good he's going to be as a prospect and as a player. I think the real asset that hurt them last year in that Rick Nash trade that they didn't want to give up was the first-round pick. But they thought Nash was going to stay until the concussion issues cropped up. So if it's a situation like that again, maybe they'll be willing to give up that kind of asset. I don't expect them to give up, you know, their top prospects unless it's a blockbuster deal and unless it's a player that's a real game-breaker and a game-changer here. But, you know, could it be a time when you start talking about a Ryan Donato as potentially trading him? Some of their defenseman prospects that came up here, Jeremy Lauzon, who came up here and looks so good, he could be a prime trade asset as well. I think they've got some pieces to move, Ryan, to make deals happen and to get players in here based on how much talent they have at the AHL level and just in their prospect cupboard, that they're going to be able to get a deal done. It just depends on the magnitude. You know, there's going to be a lot of players out there they're going to like. Michael Ferland, they're interested in. Braden Schenn would be a great fit on a number of different levels, and he signed for another year. You'd probably have to give up a first-round pick to get him. Wayne Simmonds is going to be out there. You know, who knows if Vladimir Tarasenko is going to be available. But my point is, I think they're going to have some good names to choose from, and they're going to have some players that could really add something to this team and maybe take them to that next level. Certainly allow them to compete a little better against Tampa Bay. You know, how much closer would the Bruins have been against the Lightning if Rick Nash was not a shell of himself in that series and not already dinged up, and they had a player on that second line that could really make that second line dangerous? You know, that remains to be seen, but maybe they'll get that player this time around and see for themselves how they stack up.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joins us each week on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of the time with the family.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it, bud.
He joins us each week right around this time. And look, we'll get into more on the prospects of trades. There's, you know, again, this time of year as the All-Star break going on this week, a lot of talk about, you know, which teams are going to be buyers and sellers. And I mean, certainly we think we know which category the Bruins are going to fall into as the trade deadline is a little less than a month away. But it's a question of, as always, how much is really going to be out there and how much is it going to cost you? How much are you willing to give up, as we were just talking about with him? So we'll get into more of that coming up in the next hour. 617-779-0985. If you want to jump in with us, we'll take your thoughts coming up here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, all in our Town Fair Tire Studios for another hour. We'll take your thoughts throughout. 617-779-0985. Bruins and the rest of the league off for the All-Star break. Bruins, of course, had their bye week as well earlier this week, and so they've been off since last Saturday and won't be back on the ice at the Garden until Tuesday night when they take on Winnipeg. So using this as a bit of an opportunity, along with obviously the injury to Tuukka last weekend, talked a little bit about that, but using this as an opportunity to kind of look bigger picture with the team. And as part of that, obviously, we talk about what's going to happen between now and the trade deadline with this roster. It's something that has become a regular occurrence on the show throughout the course of this season. You know, and we're getting to the point where, you know, you will start to see more and more moves here over the next few weeks as teams try to position themselves for playoff runs and beyond. So as we were talking to Joe Haggerty in the last hour, guys, I asked him about, you know, things that could be done. And we all know the targeted positions at this point. I mean, it's third line center. It's a wing for the Krejci line. You know, we've been talking about that really since the beginning of the season. But what I asked him, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on, is that Tampa Bay has, you know, looks like an absolute juggernaut. The way that the playoffs are set up, you know, more than likely you're going to, you know, at best, if you can avoid them in the first round, you're going to end up running into them in the second round. Is there help out there that is going to be somewhat affordable that the Bruins could bring in and put them on a level where they can compete in a seven-game series with a team that right now is far and away the favorite to come out of this division?
Well, first of all, if the Bruins end up as the wild card and end up playing a Metropolitan team, mm-hmm. then they're going to end up in that,
sure.
in that draw.
Yes.
So they're not necessarily going to face Tampa Bay in the second round. That would also probably mean you could potentially face Washington in the first second round.
Not sure that's what we're hoping
for. But if you
for.
Look at the numbers for the Boston Bruins, the area where they need to improve, whether we can debate center, wing, third line, second line, they need some 5-on-5 goals. Right now, the Boston Bruins rank 27th in the National Hockey League, scoring 5-on-5 goals. And the teams that are sort of scattered around them, for the most part, are not teams that are going to make the playoffs. If they can make a move to somehow bolster their offense 5-on-5, that'll put them in a much better position, because the strength of this team is the way they defend. And the way you defend, and the teams that are able to do that successfully in the playoffs, those are teams that vie for championships.
Well, there's a couple ways I look at this. And, you know, somebody asked me the other day, do you fit your team around who you might play in the playoffs? And I think there's something to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that when you have a good team, right, so the Bruins are a good team. They're not a great team, right? You wouldn't consider them an elite team in the NHL, but a good team.
Sure.
So there's no guarantee that Tampa Bay wins in the playoffs. There's no guarantee. You can get a team that plays them in the first round and knocks them out in a complete upset. We've seen this time and time again. Or we could see another team beat them in the playoffs. So what if you're the favorite? So what if you're the President's Trophy winner? When the playoffs start, who's the hottest team at that time? You know, injuries play a huge factor in it. A couple injuries sure. to key guys, all of a sudden your whole team changes the way that you play. So to say, well, look, Tampa Bay's the best team. Should we make these trades because they're just going to beat us anyhow? No. No, that's not the approach at all for them. Now, the dilemma that they have is we've got all these young guys, all right, who are having off years offensively. No question about that. We all agree on that. Do we feel that these guys are capable in the future of really taking off and exploding and being, you know, the answers to some of the questions that we have? Or do we feel that, all right, it's time to cut bait on them? You know, it's time to maybe move them and bring in somebody. And I'm not saying a rental. I'm saying bring in somebody who's going to be here for a while and be part of this team moving forward. So if you're giving up good prospects, you want some kind of condition that we're going to have somebody here moving forward. So to me, that those trades need to be made. Or all right, we're gonna trade somebody else. We're not gonna trade these live bodies. We're gonna trade somebody else or a draft pick or something like that in order to bring in that player right now. But you've got to make that decision. I don't think you entirely throw in the towel because Tampa Bay is just far and away the best team. No, you can't go into the playoffs like that because you have a chance. You do have a legitimate chance if you give your team the best opportunity. I don't think the way that they're constituted right now, they could beat Tampa Bay in a seven-game series. No, I do not. But give yourself a chance. You never know what's going to happen.
But I guess,
maybe you go into the Metro. Maybe somebody upsets Tampa in the first round. Maybe it's you that plays Tampa in the first round. You don't know that.
Playoffs started today. Tampa's playing Pittsburgh. That's not an easy matchup for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
So you don't know what's going to happen. We've seen 8-seeded teams make it all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Be playing your best hockey when the playoffs start. Be peaking at the right time. Give yourself the best chance to win. To just go in and say that, to have that attitude to say, well, Tampa's the best team, they're just going to come out of the East. It's not the way it happens.
But the point being in that question is that, like, if you're going to go out and make moves, where a lot of the guys that are out there, I mean, I know we've talked about trying to bring in players that have term or guys, you know, even the Nash trade last year, which we all agreed you had an eye toward keeping him here and it didn't work out that way. I understand that part of it, but I also look at it and say, you know, a lot of what becomes available that is somewhat affordable at the trade deadline is rental players. And if you're going to go in for rental players, that to me signals you believe you have a legitimate shot of winning a Stanley Cup, or the rental players that deal may not be worth making. And so that's where...
No, I'm with you on that. You got to balance that out. You got to balance with what you want for this season based on what you want moving forward. And you've got to value your prospects right now. And when I say prospects, I mean some of your younger players that are either here playing right now or down in Providence playing, or even the guys in college or the minors, Dan Heinen,
JFK, juniors, Donato, the guys that...
Yeah, well, those are the guys. Those are the live bodies that we've seen here. But you've also got other players that, you know, that possibly... You've got to figure out their value. But the rest of the league's figuring out their value, too. Does the rest of the league think that, you know, a guy can take off in a different situation, you know, with different players around him? You know, that's possible. Or do they think that, nah, this guy's, he's not going to make it? You know, so, just because you value your prospects here doesn't mean the rest of the league does.
Well, and that's also a tricky part. Sometimes... and I remember this in some other sports. Sometimes the hardest thing to scout is your own organization and your own team, because you're biased. You're subjective. You have an emotional connection to some of these guys that you either drafted or developed, or you put your reputation on the line to bring them into your organization. So sometimes being able to legitimately evaluate the players that you have within your system or on your roster can be very tricky. So the Bruins have to do a good job of being able to do that before they go into the trade market and make the moves that they want to make.
Well, we see that with GMs and coaches all the time across sports who, you know, I drafted this guy high. I believed in him. I 5 years later, I still believe in him, even if he's given you no reason to believe in him at that point. And it's a big reason why a lot of GMs ultimately go down with the ship, because they can't cut ties and say, okay, I made a mistake on that guy. Not saying that that's the case here, but it is a difficult thing to kind of self-evaluate and say, all right, I might have missed on this one. I have to know when to cut my losses and move on to somebody else. Let's go to Steve in Salem. Steve, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. So this is going to kind of sound like me being a Debbie Downer, but I know a lot of people want to see the Bruins be buyers at the trade deadline. I think they might actually be better off in the long run if they're sellers, and here's why. I don't know if you guys watched the recent World Junior tournament, but there was only one Bruin prospect that kind of stood out, and that was Juro Vaikkanainen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading on TSN recently, they had a list of the top 50 NHL-affiliated prospects in the league, and Vaikkanainen was the only one on the list, and he was kind of towards the bottom of that list. So I think the Bruins might be better off, you know, especially if they regress here. I think they got like 10 games before the trade deadline. If they regress and they're more, towards the bottom of the playoff, the list of playoff teams, this is what I would do. I would look at the situation in Edmonton. Now, they lost Chiarelli. They fired him, but they still have Keith Gretzky, who's familiar with the Bruins prospects and whatnot. I would see if he could maybe do us a solid. If we could trade Torey Krug perhaps to them, because they're looking for more offense. I don't know if we have the forward prospects that they would be interested in, but a guy like Torey Krug might be intriguing to them. If you could get maybe somebody like a Jesse Puljujärvi and a first-round pick, and then reinvest in this offseason, this is a pretty good draft for forwards. You could be right back in the mix next year and have a much better chance against teams like Toronto and Tampa Bay.
Steve, I appreciate the call.
Hey, no, they're open for business. There's no question.
No question.
But I wouldn't start the trade call with,
hey, can you do us a solid?
I think he'd like to rephrase that. I don't think that those words are ever going to be spoken with any GM to GM. But they're open for business. There's no question. And they need to make the playoffs. And they're right there. They're in the pack. They're in a bad pack out west.
Brutal.
Right? I mean, it's been, Jed was looking out while we were off the air there during commercial and just seeing how, the teams, there's a bunch of teams that are bunched up that all still have legitimate chances to make the wild card because everybody's been.
Just a few weeks ago, most of the west was we're writing off for dead. But the Dallas and Colorado, who are in the wild card right now at 52 points, which is just barely above 500. At Vancouver, Anaheim, Arizona, St. Louis, and Edmonton are all within 3 points of a wild card spot right now.
Which is a lot different than the West, or excuse me, than the East. Because actually, Carolina's actually played themselves into a playoff spot, but Buffalo's got a couple games in hand on them. So Buffalo and Carolina are the only team that legitimately has a chance to really catch Pittsburgh, Boston, Montreal, even Toronto, Columbus, those teams. So, Buffalo and Carolina are 5 points. Well, they're 4 points back of Pittsburgh right now, but Pittsburgh's got games in hand. So, that's a tighter race, and less teams involved in the race. The West is wide open still, which promotes more buyers, doesn't it?
For Edmonton,
isn't that a buyer?
Well, even if it doesn't, it keeps them from selling, right?
Right.
In a lot of cases. Like, even if they're not out buying, they're saying, well,
Edmonton's wide open. Anything goes right now.
Yes, but Edmonton, the mantra coming down from ownership.
They need to make the playoffs.
Make the playoffs. Anaheim, my guess is that's the same thing. You've got some wild cards in there in Vancouver because you've got a market that's been out of the playoff picture here for a while. You've got an ownership group that I think in many ways parted with Trevor Linden because they wanted to be a little bit more aggressive with their rebuild. Trevor Linden wanted them to take their time. Did they want to then enlist and start to go, okay, you know what? Let's get some assets. Let's get ourselves in the playoffs and see what we can do, even though they're a team that really can't vie and legitimately come out of the West because there's basically five teams that have separated themselves from the rest of the pack. What does Arizona do? I have no idea what they want to do. And for Doug Armstrong,
they got some money to spend. I know that.
If they want. Yes. But for St. Louis, I don't know what Doug wants to do. I think the word that I got from some of the Blues people when they recently came through town is that he's going to double down, that he's going to go back in. What does that
mean?
Last
year he traded Stastny away and they were right in the playoff hunt.
He
was set to become an unrestricted
free
agent.
And if you go to the East, where the playoff picture is a little bit clearer, Carolina, you've got a wild card and an owner right there who I think desperately wants to make the playoffs. So, okay, what does that mean? They've got a wealth of defensemen. How do they use those defensemen to create some assets to get themselves into the playoffs? And for Jason Botterill,
they've got a guy in Michael Ferland who a lot of people are after. He's having a good year. He's a big kind of power forward. They brought him in that massive trade that has certainly benefited Calgary with Hanifin and
Elias Lindholm.
Lindholm going up there. Lindholm's having a fantastic year, and he's fitting great up there. Ferland's had a good year. Dougie Hamilton, there's all kinds of whispers about him being moved. Who knows if that's accurate or not, but there's a lot of whispers that, they might move him because they've got a surplus of right-shot defensemen. All of a sudden, that deal, that trade with Calgary becomes a little ugly. So what do you do with Michael Ferland? Do you ride him out and see what he can give you if you make the playoffs? But if you don't make the playoffs, now you got a guy that's going to walk for nothing who would have brought you a pretty good haul?
Well, and that's a good question because if you trade for Ferland, you don't have anybody else like him.
He wants a lot of money, and supposedly, what we're hearing, and you never know, but what we're hearing, they're not even close. He's got a pretty high ask right now.
Right.
Right. They just signed Teravainen. Sebastian Aho is another guy that's out there that they absolutely need to sign. But you have no idea. And for Jason Botterill, for the Buffalo Sabres, they're 4 points behind Pittsburgh for the last wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Do you reward that fan base that so badly wants to get back into the playoffs for a team you know that, you know, hey, we're still a few years away. We still need a few more pieces in order to legitimately compete in the Eastern Conference. What do they do?
Right. You don't want to set back your program just trying to make the playoffs.
Right.
Just to get in to get bounced in the first round. That's not.
But you had an ownership group when the Pegulas came in that signed Ville Leino to a ridiculous contract.
They're still paying him.
They might be. I'll have to take a look on Cap Friendly. So what do the Pegulas think about what they want to do with respect to the market? And that's something that every general manager will go into this deadline. They have to have a clear picture from ownership. Okay, what are my walking orders heading into February 25th?
I believe they're done paying him. I just pulled that up. He's still in their buyout history, but he's listed as zero for this year. So we will continue. We can get more of your calls coming up. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Six 617-779-0985, the number for the Sports Hub Hockey Show. The gang in studio here. Been a week since the last Bruins game.
Ryan, before we go, so we're talking off the air, just kind of straightening everything out, making sure that we're on the same page. So for all the talk about competing with Tampa in the playoffs, right? If the playoffs open today, and I had to be schooled on this, but if the playoffs open today, the Bruins would play the New York Islanders.
Right.
And they would be in the Metro Division.
Because they're the top wild card right now. And
Pittsburgh's
Tampa
below
Bay
them
is going to play the second wild card.
Tampa's the number one team. They will play the second wild card team. Regardless of what division they're in, they play the lowest wild card, the second wild card. You know, assuming that Tampa ends up on top, which they should. So that would be Pittsburgh, points-wise, as of today. Pittsburgh's got games in hand on a couple teams in front of them. And then Boston would move over to the Metro Division.
Islanders first round, second round would be Washington,
Columbus. As of today.
Yep.
The winner up, right.
Let's go to Chris in Plainville. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. One thing that concerns me about the Bruins is the size of the overall team. With the new NHL, you would think that the smaller, more skilled teams that they put together would certainly not be this bad with 5-on-5 play. But the two things that I get going forward that are concerns are, one, injuries because of the overall size of their players, and two, it happened last year. They got out hit many, many times in the playoffs, and as far as getting out hit, injuries going in there, like you talked about that earlier, Bob, and you would think they'd be better on 5-on-5. I'll listen. Have a good one.
Bye. All right. Appreciate the call. Are the Bruins too small or not physical enough?
You always want to. We've talked about that before. You know, okay, who do we address on the wing? You know, if you're looking for a winger for Krejci, or even in that center position, you know, in the third line center, do you want some size there? If the guy can skate and he's got skill, then yeah, give me the size. You know, smaller guys, there's a place for them. There's no question. I mean, you see people thriving around the NHL that are not that big, and doing a fantastic job, but. You know, if you've got a guy that can skate and he's got some skill and he's got some size, I mean, I think that's a pretty good package. And you can always sprinkle some smaller guys in around him, but I'll take that still over a lot of other things. So those guys are tough to find right now. You know, there's certainly guys around the league that can do it. And, you know, the big power forwards who can skate and get there and make plays, you know, there's a big place for them, especially as the season grinds on and the playoffs grind on and you need some of that physicality. So I'll still take that. You know, unless you're talking special players, you know, unless you're talking to Johnny Gaudreau, I mean, that's a different story.
Right.
But, you know, that player, absolutely, I would want that.
Well, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, how many other teams...
And it's not fighter. Don't misunderstand.
Well, and it's how big you play. You know, do you go to the hard areas? You know, are you effective even though you might not be the biggest player on the ice. Like a guy like Brad Marchand is not a big player, but he's awfully effective, and he's not afraid to go to the hard areas, and he can win a lot of board battles as well. But as I'm thinking about the teams in the Eastern Conference, how many other teams that the Bruins have matched up against during the regular season, do you say to yourself, boy, I wish they had a little bit more size? The one team that comes to mind is Washington, but they're a big team. With respect to everybody around the National Hockey League. And I think that they give a lot of teams fits because of their size, because Ovechkin,
Their superstar player can be very physical player. I mean, Ovechkin can throw the body around, you know, for a guy.
Kuznetsov, most
guys in that stratosphere don't necessarily want to get involved in that
stuff. But the Capitals did the last seven games. You think they need a rest right now?
Yeah.
Seven-game losing streak they allowed 36 goals against. They scored some during that time, but they allowed 36 goals against. I think they need a little rest.
So it's not just about, you know, necessarily the size either. Like, I mean, big guys obviously are tougher to move and can hit you maybe a little harder. But, you know, I saw Bruce Cassidy talking earlier this week about Ryan Donato and, like, teaching younger guys to be stronger on their skates and winning battles and things like that. And, like, you can have smaller guys who are tougher to move off the puck or who are able to win battles along the wall. I'm not even pointing to him specifically,
but as an
example, I mean, Bruce Cassidy said it takes a lot of young guys a while to learn that because, you know, they're competing. They're not competing against college kids anymore. They're not competing against juniors anymore. They're competing against men in their 30s who, you know, are bigger and stronger than they are. And it takes a long time to figure out exactly, you know, how to approach that part of the game.
There's a skill to winning puck battles, and yes, it certainly
helps. There's a will
to
it as well.
It helps, certainly, if you're a stronger and a more mature player, but there's an art to it.
I mean, Patrice Bergeron's not the biggest guy in the world, and
How often do you see him picking himself up off the ice? You know, there's some guys that I know that there's some younger guys, and maybe it's the way that they play, but, you know, you're always seeing them pick themselves up off the ice. It's just, you know, and sometimes slowly. So, there needs to be more, and I know some of that is a physical maturity, you know, but some of it is the mental maturity as well, and some of the will and the technique and everything else that goes along with it.
617-779-0985. We've got another half hour to go here. We'll get Sports Hub headlines, and we will continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Press the right headset. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, all here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Each week at this time, we like to take a little spin around the NHL, and we welcome in now Billy Jaffe from Nesson, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline from somewhere up in the wilderness up north. What's going on, Billy?
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy break. Yeah, I'm coming to you from Purity Pond or Purity Spring in New Hampshire, Madison, New Hampshire, unbelievable pond hockey tournaments going on right now. So I hope the reception hangs in there for the next few minutes.
It's better than we get up in Canada. So you're ahead of things there.
Oh, awesome.
First and foremost, Peter Chiarelli fired by the Edmonton Oilers this week. Just talk a little bit about his tenure there. What went wrong? What led to the move being made now? Things like that.
Well, his tenure there was, you know, there's a lot of hype when he got hired by Bob Nicholson and the rest of the Edmonton Oilers management that he was, you know, going to bring a new direction of somebody from the outside coming in. And the part of the problem with the Oilers organization is that there's a lot of internal influences, or at least opinions with the organization. And, let's also face facts. Peter didn't make some great decisions too, but the team just, you know, they just, as Bob Nicholson said, there's something in the water that they're missing right now, you know, in Edmonton, meaning that they had all these high picks and they've had all this money and they have this new arena, but something else isn't going right. And Peter put himself in or put the team into a tough situation with some of these contracts that he doled out and put the team into a place where you've got the best player in the world, but yet you're one of the worst teams in the National Hockey League. So finally, when it was all said and done, they just said it's time to make a change, and Bob Nicholson is leading the charge to go find a new general manager.
Judd mentioned earlier, we were talking about the Western Conference that, you know, Edmonton is basically desperate to get into the playoffs. You know, they're trying everything they can to get this thing pointed in the right direction. Do you think they have it in them to make that run?
I mean, I think anytime you've got, you know, one guy in Connor McDavid and the other guy in Leon Draisaitl, you have a chance. The problem is they don't have a ton of depth after them, and I also don't think that they've got a lot of great stuff on the back end. The guy that they're missing a lot is Oscar Klefbom. And, you know, I think if he comes back and he can be healthy and stay healthy, then maybe they have a chance. Then again, I mean, their goaltending is quite the curious situation. Talbot is on his way out. Yeah, they're going to try and trade him. You know, can Koskinen actually lead this team? And, you know, after signing that big $13 million contract the other day, I think they can stay in it only because the West is so bad at the bottom. But would they put money on them making it RJ? No, I wouldn't.
Well, we were talking about it earlier. There's so many teams that are all basically in the same boat. It's difficult to know in some cases, as we're less than a month before the trade deadline, what's going to happen over the next month. Like, who's going to who's going to be in it? Who's going to be buyers? Who's going to be sellers? I mean, what kind of tack they're supposed to take right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, they don't have a lot. I don't think they have sure they have a lot to sell. I mean, who wouldn't want to get a Nugent Hopkins, for instance? I don't think Talbot actually carries a ton of weight on the trade market right now. I think they've completely kind of diminished any value that he had by signing Koskinen and then basically saying he's done. So teams will be like, yeah, I'll give you a fifth-round pick now or whatever, maybe a fourth for him. I mean, look,
give him some salary cap room.
Yeah, it would, and that's important, right? That's valuable. Sure. I mean, other teams like Anaheim, they want to make the playoffs. The St. Louis Blues, even though I don't think it benefits them fellas to make, you know, they want to make the playoffs. So I think it actually, with all these teams being kind of, I won't call them bad, I'll call them mediocre at best, I think it actually is going to kind of stifle the trade market for now.
Well, that's not what Bruins fans want to hear.
Well, sorry, Bruins fans, but that's probably... right now, unless there's a team out there that says, geez, we're really, you know what, we know that we can maybe make the playoffs, but then, you know what, the first round we'll probably get our butts kicked against a Vegas or whatever, San Jose or something, and they say, look, the reality is we don't want to make the playoffs, like the New York Rangers did last year. They were only a couple of points out in early February when that famous or infamous letter went out to their season ticket holders, because they said, look, so if we make the, I'm paraphrasing here, like, this isn't what we want. We want to be a long-run team, not a one-round team. And we'll see if any of these teams kind of wake up to that.
Well, you got a lot of teams in the East that are possibilities because, I mean, there's very few teams that have a realistic chance of making it.
I agree.
So how does that open things up in the East then?
Well,
even the teams that are on the cusp, Billy, like a Carolina, you know.
You're right, Bob. And then they go out and they actually – they added salary with that Nino Niederreiter deal. I still think, you know, they'd like to trade Ferland there, but now he's injured again, or he got injured. I don't know the severity of it. I agree with you. And my guess is, you know, they'll try and accrue some assets, yet moving a guy like that. Now, they signed Tara Vinen last week. They're going to re-sign Aho. They say they're looking to trade Dougie Hamilton. Their coach last week, Rod Brind'Amour, said, we're still trying to figure him out, what he is. How to, you know.
He's not alone.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, Carolina's another team, Billy, that is in the market for a goaltender. They don't have a goaltender. Curtis McElhinney, Peter Mrazek, while economically they don't cost you much, where do they go? Could Cam Talbot be a potential fit there?
They're winning right now.
That's just something to think about here down the stretch.
Well, no question about it. And it comes down to, again, it's not what Don Waddell wants, who's the general manager that was put there by Tom Dundon. It's what does Tom Dundon, the owner of Carolina, say? that he wants to make the playoffs and, let's say, get two or three home games in the first round. And so what if they lose, but he makes Altastrada $1 million or $1.5 million revenue per game? Or does he say, look, I want to build for the future? My guess is that a guy like Dundon might say, look, if we can make the playoffs, let's go for it. You know, if we don't have to give up anything for the future, per se. And, again, I don't see Talbot garnering more than maybe a fourth-round pick, maybe. But the Eastern Conference, you know, the one team that's always curious to me, and it just feels like it, Beersy and Judd and RJ, that is on this kind of quasi-move again, is the Florida Panthers. You know, will they become a team that gets within 6 points again, but, oh, they scare everybody down the stretch after the pretty poor start that they had? I mean, they could have a few players that they could move to.
Well, just to go with the Florida Panthers, coming out of the break, and when they hit February, they have an abundance of home games. So my guess is that Dale Tallon, the general manager down there, is going to give his Panthers a little bit of time to see if they can catch fire, get hot, put themselves back into the playoff chase, because they still have a lot of ground to make up for a wild card spot. If they're unable to make that push in early February, he's starting to move people.
Well, I mean, I've been told that there's going to be, and this isn't exactly earth-shattering analysis or information, that, you know, if this team doesn't get themselves into the playoffs, that there's going to be, you know, major changes down there. And I don't know how there couldn't be, especially after the start that they had again this season. But, Judd, even if they have a nice run and they get themselves within 6 points of the playoffs, I mean, then he's saying, well, we're that good again. We're holding on to our assets. I don't know. Let's face it, when it's all said and done, Luongo and Reimer, Luongo was good early on in the year. He's having a hard time being good right now. He's 39, almost 40. Reimer is a backup. That's all he is, but he's making too much money for his position. They put themselves into a tough spot with their goaltending. They, believe it or not, they could use a new goalie down there as well, I think.
Talking to Billy Jaffe of Nesson, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. With the All-Star break this week comes, you know, Gary Bettman addressing the state of the league and all of that. And I thought a couple of really interesting things he pointed out. You know, talking about how the scoring in the NHL, goal scoring, is on the highest pace that it's been in a decade. And then he also pointed out how 9 of the top 11 point scorers in the league are 25 or younger right now.
Yep.
Are we kind of moving into like a, you know, for lack of a better term, some sort of a golden era or some sort of a, you know, this really exciting time, I think, right now for the league as to what this game is going to look like here over the next decade?
Well, I think so, because these are you've got a full generation of talent now who have played with, you know, the whole, we'll call it the new style of hockey, skill, pace, you know, that kind of stuff. The referees in the game is all consistently, well, let me rephrase that, we see it inconsistently. The expectations of our games are going to be called consistent now. We have, you know, guys aren't sticking as much. They're trying to eradicate any of that slashing that they had 2 years ago. So we could be really interesting.
All right. Great year. Yeah, I think we're going to cut it there. Thanks for joining us, Billy, if you can hear us. But it's getting a little rough. The wilds of New Hampshire finally caught up to us. So cell service is what it is. But Billy Jaffe joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. But I mean, just to that end, guys, and we'll grab another call or two before we wrap things up here. But, you know, I love the fact that, look, the All-Star festivities are what they are. And, you know, if people watched and enjoyed the thing last night, great. If they watched the 3-on-3 tournament today and enjoy it, great. Really doesn't do a lot for me. But I think the excitement level of looking around the league and seeing, as Gary Bettman points out, the young stars that are coming up in this league and that are really starting to come into their own and take over the top superstar level spots in this league, it's exciting to think about. You know, we're seeing scoring go up. We're seeing the dynamic plays and the highlight reel type of goals on a regular basis. To think about what this team is, or what the, not this this team, but this league is going to look like here in the coming years, you know, it's a much different game than I think most of us grew up watching, but it has become a very exciting product and something that is sellable, as opposed to what it was back a decade ago, and you know, people complained about clutching and grabbing and all of that stuff.
I still like the league 10 years ago. I like the league 20 years ago. I like the league 30 years ago. It was still good. Yes, it's exciting to see all these young players come into the game, but I miss having the grizzled veterans around. And because of what you've seen in the National Hockey League salary cap situation that Gary has engineered, is you have a handful of high-paid guys, a lot of really young guys that you don't pay much, and not much in the middle.
Yeah, I'm partial to a few years ago. So, I mean, the league's fast. It's young. It's exciting. It's skilled. There's no question about it. I love seeing a lot of that stuff. I think that they've taken a little bit too much out of the game in certain areas, whether it's the front of the net or different things you see. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see some of the penalties called now, and that's not a penalty. And you know, the referees are told to call it a certain way, and you know, it is a penalty. You know, by the book, it is a penalty. So, you know, it's not their fault. They're calling it the way that they're told to be, you know, to call it. But I just think that some of the battles that it used to be, you know, some of the areas that used to be the dirty areas or the harder areas to go to are a lot less difficult, you know. And if you know, God forbid you knock somebody down in front of the net, you're getting a penalty. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're the offensive guy or the defensive guy, you're probably getting a penalty. So, you know, where's the battle areas, you know, other than being, you know, hit with a puck there? You know, where's the danger area other than being hit with a puck? But that's just, hey, you accept it, okay. Okay, how do we adapt? How do we make the best of this? How do we play the way that you need to? There are still battles out on the ice to be won. You know, there's little one-on-one things in the corner. You like that. You like a lot of the skill. You like a lot of the strategy that's implemented, you know, whether it's the creativity, whether it's off of a face-off play or whether it's off of a power play and all the movement that you're seeing now and all the skill levels never been higher, I don't think, in terms of the way that the game is played. So you have to adapt and move that way. And you know, if you don't embrace it, then you're going to be left behind. So, and that was one of the criticisms for Edmonton, whether it's warranted or not, that they're not keeping up with the times, mm-hmm. With regards to how the game needs to be played and the analytics and everything else that goes along with it. And there's too many of the old guard kind of running the show up there. But Bob Nicholson said, no, that's not the case. So I don't know if there's any truth to it, not truth to it, but they're going to make some major changes here moving forward, and they've got some work to do.
I mean, they've got a few foundational players that they can build around. There's no question about that. It's just, as Billy just said, the depth isn't there beyond that, and they haven't been able to, you know, put a team around those guys that can compete.
Well, and Peter Chiarelli made some trades that absolutely damaged the team. Whether or not you like it, all right, you trade Taylor Hall to the New Jersey Devils. Mm-hmm. You needed to get a big-time defenseman back. Adam Larson is a good player. He's not on the level of Taylor Hall. You traded Jordan Eberle, and whatever you thought of Jordan Eberle, he was creative for you. You got Ryan Strome back. You turned Ryan Strome into Ryan Spooner. So essentially you traded Jordan Eberle for Ryan Spooner, who they just put on waivers and played just less than 7 minutes. That's not a deal that you can make.
Cleared waivers.
He cleared and he still played. You know, I'm sure Ken Hitchcock was grinding his teeth over that one. But
he was brought in just before Hitchcock, and when I saw Hitchcock got hired as coach, it was like, oh, no.
You know, and then it's the way that he managed or mismanaged the salary cap. You can't hand Milan Lucic the contract you handed to him. Stan Bowman, one of his biggest mistakes during the offseason was signing Brandon Manning to, like, a big deal on the back end. He barely played, and somehow he was able to unload him to Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton for Drake Caggiula, who they liked and was a useful player. I remember Todd McClellan a few years ago when the Oilers were first starting on their run, and they still had Hall and Eberle. He said what we needed were some key role players. They had a key role player in Drake Caggiula, who all of a sudden fell out of favor, and they dealt this season for an awful contract on the back end. So there's a lot of work to do to dig out from the salary cap, much less what you have on your roster here going forward.
Well, and just going back to the conversation we were having earlier about GMs getting too attached to some players, I mean, Peter Chiarelli, Milan Lucic, I mean, that is a prime example. You know, how does he wind up there? Well, he got significantly overpaid and is continuing to get significantly overpaid because of that contract. You know, I think there were more than a few people around the league who saw that one coming down the pike, and it turned into reality. Real quick, let's get to John, who's been holding. John, you're up next on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. I guess Harvard education isn't what it once was. But putting that aside, I'm just a quick question. Why are the Bruins so giving up so many shorthanded goals? They're like 2.5 times the league average. They've given up 10. What's going on, and how do they fix it?
All right. We'll close on that. Any thoughts on the preponderance of shorthanded goals?
It has been addressed a lot. So, I mean, we've touched on this. You love seeing the creativity that they have offensively, on the offensive side of things, on that power play. Where is Krug best fit on that power play? So he'll start up top, you know, but he moves down into the right wing half wall. He'll move down into the right wing, low in the right wing side, trying to make plays from down there. He's actually probably a little bit better than Marchand making plays from the right wing half wall, you know, trying to find the seam or trying to find Bergeron in front or making a pass in front. So what happens then? Well, Pastrnak rotates up high or Marchand rotates up high. All the movement, and if you turn the puck over or if you make one bad decision, you're left shorthanded on the back end. So there's been some talk about, okay, we still want to have that movement. We still want to encourage some of that creativity offensively, but there also has to be some thought to, you know, when do I kind of cut bait? When do I have to get myself back? Now, ironically, since they've started talking about that and since they've started kind of moving in that, you know, with that mindset, the power play's gone cold. The power play's gone cold the last week. Now, a lot of things have gone cold. They lost 3 out of 4 games and some teams that were out of the playoff spot, and a couple of them at least out of the playoff structure. So, you know, you got to have that balance. You can live with some shorthanded goals. Judd, you pointed out a couple weeks ago, you know, some of the top power plays in the league give up the most shorthanded goals. But it got to be to a point where they're momentum killers. They're deflating goals. When they happen, you know, it sucks the air out of the bench. You think, okay, we're going to get back into this game with a power play, and then you give up a shorthanded goal. You know, that sucks the air out of it. So there's certain situations where you can't allow that to happen. So there's a balance there. They have addressed it. You know, they still want to go with 4 forwards and be aggressive on that power play, but there has to be a time where, you know, maybe it's Torrey Krug or maybe it's even somebody else that has to rotate back and be a little more conservative on a 50-50 puck instead of jumping up into the play and then giving up a breakaway.
Well, that's what I was kind of wonder aloud is, you know, would you consider putting a second defenseman out there to take some of that away? I wouldn't think so.
They have on the second unit.
Yes. All right, we'll leave it at that. We've got Bruins back in action on Tuesday night against Winnipeg. Of course, these guys will have the call right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, and we're back with you next Saturday morning for another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.